Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with My Opel, rewarding loyalty and taking care of members.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. Today, what is the future for mass COVID testing? We'll hear from the HSE Chief Clinical Officer shortly. Outfits on show at the Fianna Fáil party thinking have no place in public, full stop. A senator responds to that newspaper column ripping into how parliamentary party members were dressed last week. How much does it cost to go to third level? We'll have a parent bearing the brunt of the bill, and consumer journalist Siobhan Maguire has been totting up the numbers. Two political polls over the weekend put Sinn Féin well ahead of its political rivals, and today we'll examine what each of the main parties stands for. Clinical child psychologist Dr. David Coleman will be here later on too to take your parenting questions, so now is your chance to get those questions into us. Just text 51551, email todaycb@rte.ie, or on Twitter we are at Today with Claire. First this morning, widespread testing for COVID-19 could be scaled back, according to a paper drawn up for the National Public Health Emergency Team. The plan looks at steps which could be taken here as the harm associated with infection reduces. Dr. Colm Henry is the Chief Clinical Officer with the HSE and he joins me from our Cork studio. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
Thanks very much for joining us this morning. So the front of the Irish Times and the Irish Independent both saying today that advice has gone from the HSE to NPHET around scaling back the mass testing regime. What can you tell us about that?
This is a discussion paper to inform NPHET discussions. It's not a formal HSE paper. As with the whole lifetime of NPHET, there have been a number of discussion papers informing the next step when we went from the first case in Ireland on February the 29th to the realisation that it was an enormous worldwide pandemic, as announced by the WHO. And then that famous flatten the curve message and the testing strategy that went with it that was advised by the WHO last year, when we had a situation where we were dealing with a new virus for which there was no immunity and no vaccination, and we were trying to protect the kind of scenes we saw in Wuhan and Northern Italy by flattening that curve, by chasing every case and by testing, rapid and blanket case ascertainment. And that was certainly a strategy that we needed to do right across the world at the time, and it was a strategy advised by, as I say, the WHO. We're now entering a different scenario, hopefully, where we're seeing not just the vaccination have enormous effect, and vaccinations come on stream much more rapidly than any of us would have dreamed of a year ago, but also uptake of the vaccine at extraordinary levels in Ireland. Mm-hmm. And that may open up choices to us.
So we don't need to chase down the cases anymore?
Well, we at this point in time, we are continuing that current policy of chasing down cases because we are still seeing high levels. The five-day moving average, some sense of stability there, where we're seeing 1,200 to 1,400 cases per day. And certainly we're beginning to see some sense of stability in the numbers of cases in hospitals too, 321 today. And the numbers of new cases per day, 20 to 30 per day, maybe falling a little. And more notably, a bit falling certainly week after week in all those vaccinated age groups. So what we're seeing now is not just a stabilisation of the numbers, but falling in those groups that are vaccinated. So as I say, this points towards a considerable impact of the vaccine is having in bringing us from a situation where we had no immunity and no defence from a virus that was new to us to one where the vaccine affords us considerable protection against serious illness.
And the paper, the discussion paper, which is reported on today, says that the testing regime at the moment is medicalising daily life in ways that may have significant social consequences. Do you agree with that?
Well, I certainly think it's something, unfortunately, we had to do. And I know as Chief Clinical Officer that I'm aware of the secondary effects of the measures that we had to introduce to curb this pandemic and to flatten that curve and to chase every case the past year. And that resulted, as people know, in us configuring a healthcare system towards COVID initially and then towards delivery of COVID and delivery of other services in a COVID environment. Certainly, this paper points towards what how we would change the perspective towards COVID as it enters an endemic environment. It appears less likely we're going to rid ourselves of this virus, but with widespread protection of vulnerable groups and a stable healthcare system, as I say, it will give us choices.
Yes, but the population now has learned that testing is so important and controlling the spread is so important. So if we get to the point, which as this paper says, where you'd be advising against testing vaccinated people with mild symptoms or children under the age of 13 with mild symptoms, it's going to be very difficult for people to accept that, given what we've been told up to this point.
Well, what we were told up to this point was absolutely necessary to avoid the kind of mortality and illness we would have seen in vulnerable groups. Sadly, we've seen over 5,000 deaths attributed to COVID in this country, and we've seen many more pro rata in other countries. We've seen other healthcare systems become overrun. There were a series of measures we needed to do to avoid our healthcare system being overrun and to avoid seeing uncontrolled mortality with a virus that was new to us. If we transition based on the case numbers and based on the harm that those cases do, which appears to be diminishing, towards setting a sense of perspective for COVID-19 along with other seasonal viruses, of course that will be a messaging challenge for us. Okay. But we've dealt with much more significant messaging challenges from the onset of this pandemic and from the first case that came to Ireland in February.
From what you're saying, though, change is coming on the mass testing front, despite the fact that we had 1,300 plus cases yesterday.
Yeah, the cases are still too high, but what we're seeing is that the link between cases and harm is certainly falling. If you look at the numbers of deaths in January at the worst end of the spectrum, over 1,600 deaths in January, and then we look between April the 1st and April the 20th and August the 21st, 8th of this year, 193 deaths. So at the very severe end of the spectrum, deaths, admissions to ITU, we see a great impact of the vaccination programme in terms of reducing harm. And that's the place we want to get to. We'd like to see the cases lower again. We'd like to see even greater uptake of vaccination, particularly in those younger populations that we're reaching out to now. And we'd like to see clearly lower hospital numbers and lower numbers in ITU, but we're heading in the right direction.
On children in school who are close contacts and who are being told to stay at home, we know that's causing huge problems for parents and for children and for schools. Paul Reid saying yesterday, the HSE CEO, that rule is probably unnecessary, that close contacts in schools be excluded. Do you agree?
I think you have to watch this closely. Certainly our learning from children to date is that they're not, the schoolroom, the classroom is not a real incubator of COVID-19 disease, and that child-to-child transmission is unusual in school settings. And in that whole school year, thanks to all the efforts of our public health teams, education teams, parent teachers and so on, we only saw 16 schools close out of 4,000 schools at a time when the vaccination programme didn't have a fraction of the traction that it has now. So certainly we will reach an inflection point where the measures, not just for schools but for other people right across society, where the benefits to them in terms of a disease whose impact is waning and where a vaccination programme is strengthening, where the benefits of ongoing measures such as those will be outweighed by their harm. And certainly the public health opinion at the moment is that we will continue with these measures with designation of asymptomatic close contacts. But we're certainly, if the tendencies and the positivity rate continues to fall among children and we don't see significant outbreaks in school settings, it certainly will open choices to us in terms of allowing asymptomatic children to remain at school under observation.
So that doesn't quite tally with what Paul Reid was saying yesterday, that this measure is probably unnecessary. You're not going that far at all in what you've just said.
I think it probably is. I think we probably will find it to be unnecessary. We just need to see the assurance in these first few weeks of return to school that we don't see a huge surge in cases of Delta among school children, and we don't see multiple outbreaks. And the signs are positive so far. As I said, we're seeing a surge in testing for sure, and that's to be expected when children return to school, when we see them interact more and there's other respiratory illness such as respiratory syncytial virus. But we've seen falling positivity rates among children in the community testing, for example. If you're not 14 years of age, only 6% are positive, 7% in children aged between 16 and 18. So we're seeing falling positivity rates against a background of increased testing because of children interacting together. This all points towards, hopefully, towards a scenario where we will see all with the Delta virus having an impact in terms of transmission, but not having a significant impact in terms of childhood illness and in terms of disruption to children.
Okay, I want to talk to you about the comments made by Professor Cliannaigh Callaigh on Brendan O'Connor's programme yesterday, where she said the country is currently letting the disease rip through primary schools. She went on to say, if I were a betting woman, I would probably be betting that most kids in Ireland will be, under 12s, will be getting COVID before the spring, the way we're going now. Not many kids are going to get severely unwell. Now, that's very worrying for parents. What do you make of those comments?
That's one take on a number of papers that have come out on this subject recently. I think based on our experience pre-Delta, we saw, for example, in the first 12 weeks after school opening in May, we saw about 5,500 cases between the age of 6 and 15. That was a fraction of the school-going population, perhaps 1% or slightly more. It would be a big jump of the imagination to see that jump from 1% to 75% or thereabouts. And these are based on papers which are open to interpretation, which make a number of assumptions which cannot always be applied to an Irish situation. What I can say is the outbreaks so far, we've seen a number of outbreaks in school settings. As is before, many of these outbreaks, if not most of them, are associated with community transmission rather than child-to-child transmission within the school. So that discovery and that evolving knowledge about children and classrooms not being incubators of the illness, certainly within school settings, is holding so far. But we need to see further assurance in the coming weeks since schools have opened at the beginning of September.
So are certainly you saying her prediction is wrong?
I think it's one prediction, but it's one interpretation. But I certainly don't agree, based on the data being presented to me and the expert advice I'm getting, that we're going to see levels as wildly high as that.
Okay. She said, Professor Callaigh said her prediction was based on modelling done in the US and speaking with her infectious disease colleagues. Are you aware of that modelling from the United States?
Yes, I'm aware of the paper and I've read the paper and I've received advice on that paper. And as I said, some of the assumptions in that paper cannot be applied to the Irish situation. But I think here in Ireland and in other countries in the UK, we're just not seeing the surge in cases yet. Certainly we're seeing an increase in testing. And because it's a more transmissible variant, we expect to see more cases in children. And we will see outbreaks. But hopefully, based on the trends I've outlined, Claire, we won't see the surge in cases as predicted by Professor Callaigh.
So on the advice given to parents who are fully vaccinated but whose child is a symptomatic positive COVID case, now those parents are being told that because they're vaccinated, they can continue to go to work. They don't need to restrict their movements. But we know, don't we, that fully vaccinated people, they can still carry the COVID infection. Can you explain to me why that advice is there?
Well, we close contact designation to vaccinated people as people that they can no longer be designated as close contacts, because we know that vaccine affords them considerable protection from illness and also certainly has a reduction in transmission. So that advice is right across the board, that close contact designation cannot be given to somebody who's fully vaccinated, parents or otherwise.
Even if I'm going to the supermarket or going about my business and work, I could still be spreading this infection as a fully vaccinated person.
It is much less likely. The evidence we have from the vaccination is that it's highly effective in reducing serious illness and certainly has an effect in reducing transmission. And that's borne out by the falling incident levels of cases we're seeing in all age groups.
Okay, I want to talk to you about Sláinte Care, because you're a member, aren't you, of the Sláinte Care Implementation Advisory Council. And we've had those two high profile resignations, which appear, certainly according to what the Taoiseach was saying and others, to have come out of the blue. Now, Liam Doran is a former General Secretary of the INMO and a member of the council. He said the group had been marginalised. Do you feel the same?
I can't say it's been marginalised. Certainly, we've seen an extraordinary... I'm a member of the Sláinte Care Council, and nobody in the Sláinte Care and nobody in the Sláinte Care Council and none of us in healthcare were expecting a pandemic with four surges and as well as a cyber attack. So we've seen 18 months of extraordinary disruption to healthcare. But what I would say is what has happened during those 18 months, and I've directly observed this in any healthcare systems I worked in myself or visited, is Sláinte Care, as was put, Sláinte Care on speed. In those, we've seen integrated care models which we spent years preparing and piloting being set up at speed, community assessment hubs, clinical teams being increased in the community, diagnostics being provided for GPs. Yes, there's frustration over the slowness of pace and some of the structures around Sláinte Care, but some of the healthcare vision, which is certainly encapsulated by Sláinte Care, was brought together and implemented by necessity and at speed during particularly in those early days of the pandemic.
Because there's a sense that Sláinte Care, the plan, fell by the wayside because of the pandemic and the cyber attack.
Yeah, well, just all I can do is speak from the clinical perspective, Claire. And what I saw was we have models of care for older people. We have models of care for those with chronic disease that I have to say have been frustrating for us in healthcare because they were developed for years. We've known we've invested and focused far too much on the hospital intensive end of chronic disease and for older people. And for years, we've been frustrated over the lack of investment in the whole span of care to be able to provide care out there in the community, to be able to avoid hospital admissions, to be able to provide diagnostics for people to avoid a footfall within hospitals. By necessity, we had to bring these in during the pandemic, and we had to pick up and dust down these models of care that we've known about for years, that are certainly sláinte care friendly, and implement them at speed in response to the threat to hospitals and the response to our need to avoid footfall in hospitals.
Were you surprised that Professor Tom Keane and Laura McGahey resigned?
Yes, I only learned about it on the day of the resignation.
Do you know why they resigned?
There's a letter, I believe the letter is in public circulation regarding Tom Keane expressing his frustration with the structures, and I think you alluded to that earlier.
Because Liam Doran said that the council, of which you're a member, hadn't been afforded the opportunity to give advice on a number of pivotal aspects of the plan. Do you share that view?
As I say, certainly within the past 18 months, I couldn't avoid but say that certainly the sláinte care and the whole machinery around sláinte care was certainly under pressure because we were dealing with a pandemic and because we were dealing with a cyber attack laterally. So certainly I can understand the frustration of other implementation council members. From my own perspective, I know that there were good reasons for our distraction in healthcare because we were dealing with overwhelming crises that threatened lives, that threatened our healthcare systems, and that demanded our prioritisation and complete attention.
What we heard over the weekend was that the waiting list plan, so the plan to deal with the waiting list, we know that there's close to 1 million people on there, but the detail that we got last week showed that over 200,000 public patients who need surgery or to see a specialist will be waiting until February of 2023 to get that care. And what we heard over the weekend was that the plan to tackle that waiting list, that was a point of contention and disagreement between the department and sláinte care. Is that the case?
I'm not aware of that disagreement, and certainly the waiting list, from a clinical perspective, is a big worry to me and to clinicians and people who lead different clinical programmes. Again, we have models of care we've developed over the past few years, and what I want to see is the same intent and purpose and focus that we focus on the pandemic and the reaction to that onto waiting lists, because what we proved during the pandemic was with that kind of focus and energy, we can respond to the most extreme of crises, and I've no doubt if we approach the waiting list with the same energy, we can do the same thing.
All right, thank you very much for joining us. That's Dr. Colm Henry there, Chief Clinical Officer with the HSE. Now, coming up after the break, a Fianna Fáil senator responds to that newspaper column published yesterday, which ripped into how parliamentary party members were dressed at the Fianna Fáil think-in last week. That's coming up next.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.